Hi, you are listening to the Conflict and Development in Africa podcast. This podcast is for policymakers, governments, researchers, students, businesses, and anyone that is interested in conflict and development issues in Africa. On this podcast, we hear from experts from across Africa and the world. Your host, Dr. Michael Wangpa, will ask the questions you would want answers to. Michael Wangpa has an extensive experience spanning over a decade studying, researching, writing, and consulting on conflict and development issues in Africa.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Conflict and Development in Africa podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Michael Wangpa. Today we're going to be looking at women's representation in Africa's political space. I'm joined by two special guests, Dr. Damilola Agbala-Jobi and Dina Musin Dawezo. Dr. Agbala-Jobi is Associate Professor of Political Science at Obafemi Awolowo University, Nigeria, where she currently heads the department and remains the first female to head the department since its inception. Dr. Agbala-Jobi specializes in gender studies, peace and conflict, and political economy. Her most recent book is titled Promoting Gender Equality in Political Participation, New Perspectives on Nigeria. And our second guest, Dina, is an international consultant on gender and development. She's based in Nairobi, Kenya. She's a pan-Africanist feminist and the former co-CEO of Womankind Worldwide, an international NGO based in the United Kingdom. Before then, she was also a director of policy and communication at Womankind Worldwide. And previously, she was the executive director at African Women's Development and Communication Network, FEMNET. It is my very pleasure to welcome both of you, and I look forward to a wonderful conversation.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, it's going to be, I'll start off with a general question. So I'll ask you the same question. Let me start off with Damilola. How would you describe, what is the state of women participation in Africa? Do you think we've made progress so far?
Yeah, thank you very much for the question, and thank you for having me here. First and foremost, I'm no longer at the head of the department. I left that position last year. I'm actually on a fellowship right there in University Los Andes in Bogota, Colombia, for 8 months. So I'll be finishing my fellowship here in May. The pace of progress in Africa regarding women's political participation is indeed very slow. Seems, unfortunately, it seems we are even moving backwards, especially in some parts of Africa. And then we have this underrepresentation of women and in political spheres, coupled with limited access to technology. And all these things can, I think, are significantly hindered sustainable development in Africa. Because for me, I see that having more than half of the population not represented, not engaging in governance, in technology development advancement, has kind of created a gap that affects the entire continent's growth. So we are still very far behind. We are not making progress. And it's very, very important for us to tackle that. That's what I would say.
Okay. Dina, do you agree with Damilola's position?
I totally agree that there has been a bit of progress, but it's extremely slow, and it's definitely not where we are supposed to be in terms of international standards and regional standards, because as per the international standards, the Sustainable Development Goals set a target of 50% representation of women in leadership positions at different levels and in different sectors. And as far as political participation of women in Africa is concerned, we are still at 24%. And the progress for the past 5 years has been extremely slow. we are seeing some progress in terms of movements, especially feminist movements and women's movements, really mobilizing and supporting women in politics to be successful, so that it is also just not numbers, it's also women that bring about change. And so for me, maybe the progress I would celebrate is the feminist movements and women movement that are actually continue to push for this agenda, and that even the little progress we have seen, I feel that I owe it to the women's movement that have strongly advocated and supported women in political leadership. But I do think that we need to do better than what we have. Of course, some countries are more ahead than others, and we can go into that later. But overall, progress is extremely slow.
I like what you said about I wanted to go to Demla, but let me stay with you. And I wanted, can you expatiate on that when you say we've made progress, but not just in numbers? So I think, from my understanding, you're talking about quality rather than quantity. But can you speak more on that, on what you mean by not just numbers?
Yeah, because there's also the substantive representation of women, that, yeah, we want more women in politics. And I think that's part of democracy, that women should be equally represented in policies that affect their lives. It's part of democracy and governance as a wider issue. It's part of gender equality. And oftentimes we hear, so what if you have more women in parliament? So, for example, I come from in Rwanda, we have majority women in parliament since 2013. And the question is always asked, what has changed because we have women in parliament, which is oftentimes not a fair question, to be honest, because we don't ask the same of men. And I do think that quality in terms of governance and terms of services provided to citizens is a responsibility of everyone in leadership. It's not just a responsibility of women. But nevertheless, they have been documented case studies that show, women, when we have more women in parliament, for example, that we have more gender sensitive laws being passed. This is the case in Rwanda, where we have, we have had really progressive laws on whether it is land reform, which allows women to not just access land, but have full ownership of land and have control over it. We have laws around ending gender-based violence. We have laws around reducing maternal health. We have laws around inheritance. Inheritance was such a big thing in terms of policies and laws, whereby boys traditionally were the only ones who could inherit property from their fathers or families. But now there is a law that actually says both boys and girls have equal right to inheritance. And so we have seen progress with like number of women in parliament in Rwanda. We have seen the same happening in Senegal, whereby once we had more women in parliament in Senegal, we saw a law being passed on ending rape and rape being redefined for the very first time in that country. And so there are case studies that show that actually women, because of their lived experiences, they do understand the gender and issues affecting women more, and they are most likely to push for those issues. But I still say that it shouldn't be entirely their own responsibility. It should be a responsibility of all leaders in political leadership.
Yeah, I agree. Let me come back to you. What you had a less positive assessment of the progress that has been made. What do you think are the challenges?
Yes, why I said overall, yes, Rwanda has been making progress. But when we look at Africa itself, the parliament around Africa, we just have about 27.3% of women representation in parliaments, which of course is below global average. And this is because of deeply entrenched patriarchal norms and political instability in most of our countries. Most of our regions kind of hinder political progress. And we see that a lot of women, even though we have seen women trying to make efforts there are so many structural challenges, making it difficult for women to get there. And it's starting from the social norms within our society that has already still makes politics look as if it's for men and men alone. This is number one challenge. The structural norms within our society is making it difficult. And when women are trying to get there are so many structural factors that hinders them, and within our political parties also. Because even when women can, especially starting from the grassroots, many of our political parties kind of find it difficult for women to be there. When women are there, they are just put in positions, maybe just as women leader, where they don't actually have substantive, they don't have substantive power to perform. And they are just seen and not heard, their voice are not heard. And when the political parties don't allow women to get into these positions, how would they even ever be a voice? How would they ever be voted for? And so I think this is one of the problems we have. Women are not there. Structural factors are very, very are important. And then I think it's also important for us to know that it's politics itself is such that women still find it difficult to be able to play the game like men do because of so many challenges that politics, you know, potence, violence, and also some of these things are still seen within our political party. We had cases of where women were born in Nigeria. And so these are some of the challenges that makes it difficult for women to get to those positions. That's why I'm still saying that we still have this, the progress is still very slow for us in Africa. Mm.
Let me ask you a question. There's something Dina mentioned, particularly inheritance laws that have been passed and now better in Rwanda. In Nigeria, there was the gender equality opportunity bill that got to the Senate but was overwhelmingly rejected. And that bill would have supported women's inheritance, equal opportunities in marriage, inheritance, employment. Why do you think the case of Nigeria is quite distant to have? Why is it worked in Rwanda and not worked in Nigeria? Why is this different?
Nigeria is homogeneous. We have different cultures and different values. Mm-hmm. You know, in the southwest of Nigeria, this will not be an issue, women's inheritance. But we have the eastern part of Nigeria, we have the south, the northern part of Nigeria, where culture and religion. So it's a function of the culture and religion that makes it difficult for us to be able to, and that's why the bill was thrown out. That's why so many people are still trying to advocate for the bill to be, they are still trying to revisit that bill. So Rwanda has had, it's like a springboard for many other African countries to follow the examples, and because they really made progress, and I think quota has really helped them in Rwanda. But fortunately, Nigeria, we are still far behind. And that's why a lot of people are seeing a lot of movement, a lot of society organizations are still crying out to say, no, this bill must be brought back. And it's because of our values and our culture. And it's because we are, the cultural values differ from region to region in Nigeria. And that is why we are where we are today. It's just a culture.
Dina, Damola mentioned quota. That quota has helped in Rwanda, but is it just quota? Are there other structural, cultural factors that have helped progress women's participation in Rwanda?
Yeah, and I wanted to view in on the last point Dr. Demore has made in terms of the difference between Rwanda and Nigeria as far as passing progressive laws that support gender equality and women's issues are concerned. Mm-hmm. I think the other point that is extremely key is political support, especially from the top leadership. And I think that's the major difference that I see, not just between Rwanda and Nigeria, but also Rwanda and Kenya and other African countries, is that also Rwanda has traditional patriarchal social norms that are still hindering, that could also have hindered one, having women in big numbers in political leadership, but also they could have hindered having progressive laws and policies. But I do believe that because of really strong leadership from right from the president, who really believes in supporting and advancing gender equality, and who really believes in potential of women, not just for gender equality, but for advancing other development goals, that has made a difference. And somehow, shifted the culture, and not entirely, but to the extent that there is support for that as a society, but coming from the top leadership. So I wanted to say that. But some of other challenges that I think that we are facing in Africa as far as women in political leadership is concerned, I definitely agree in terms of the systematic challenges around patriarchy and social gender norms and perceptions that see women as those that belong in the kitchen or in the domestic sphere and not in the public sphere. And I think that somehow shapes how women are seen, how they are supported, the resources they get in political leadership, and even to be able to win elections, for example. And the other important points around that is also the gender roles and, for example, unpaid care work and domestic work, whereby even when women are in the political campaigning to become, members of parliament or other roles, or when they are appointed to be ministers, they are still expected to cater for the domestic responsibilities in terms of, childcare, in terms of cooking and caring for everyone in the household, those who are able-bodied, those with disability, those who are sick. There is a lot of expectation around women caring for their communities. So if someone dies, if there is something happening in charge, all these responsibilities and expectations are still expected of women, regardless whether you have become a member of parliament, regardless whether you have become cabinet secretary. And for me, I think that also becomes a challenge in terms of women to be able to effectively lead and focus on that and give it the utmost attention that it deserves. But also issues around harassment, intimidation, I think that we see all the time, on campaign trail, but also in places of work, like in parliament, and oftentimes it is backed up and supported by the media. So like here in Kenya, there was an entire debate about what a woman was wearing going to parliament, that she was wearing a dress short-sleeved. And I don't know why it bothered the public so much that the woman was showing her arms. So then attention shifted to just looking at what the woman is wearing as opposed to what the woman has to say, to what politics, what agenda she's pushing for, and all those kind of things. And so that kind of environment that is not conducive and system that have not necessarily shifted, even when we have had women in parliament or in political leadership generally, continue to be an obstacle.
Speaking of harassment and the toxic environment, work environment in Nigeria, Damla, I wanted to comment on the recent ongoing with there's a senator that's been suspended, Senator Natasha, by the Senate president, whom she's accused of sexual harassment or something like that. Does this apply? Is this what Dina is talking about in terms of even when women get to that level of position, they are not free from some of these challenges?
Yeah, you're right. It's unfortunate that no matter the level women get to, women have to work extra hard to retain such positions because the challenges are still there from when you're a child, a girl, to when you become a grown-up woman. Whatever position you find yourself, these societal challenges are still there. And it's unfortunate that, yes, those workplace harassments, those workplace challenges seems not to stop as long as you're a woman. And that is what Diana has said. And yeah, unfortunately, Natasha's issue is one case in example, and it's unfortunate that the people we Nigerians are actually supposed to be looking up to have refused to act as good adversaries for us in Nigeria, especially for women. And so this is one of the challenges we see, and this is actually buttresses the fact that women still face a lot of societal challenges when it comes to positions of leadership. So you can imagine, I was actually telling my daughter recently that imagine if a woman at that level can face such harassment, what happens to a common woman within the society? It's what is happening in Africa, and it's unfortunate that we are still at this level, and it's something we need actually to to find a solution to. And I'm glad that so many movements, some organizations are already coming up and saying that there must be something, justice must be done. So, you know, because if somebody is asking, I work in a university environment. If a student comes to accuse somebody of sexual harassment, the university has it as a responsibility to ask question, why, what happened, and investigate what happened. Irrespective of what, if somebody comes out to stand boldly, I'm sure that there is no woman who wants to stand boldly. For me, it's even a thing of, I feel embarrassed. And that's one of the things, people, the society wants women to be quiet, not to talk, because I will feel embarrassed if somebody harasses me. And we want us to always, you know, keep quiet and keep our voice in mute, because it's even an issue of embarrassment. But if somebody can come out boldly to stand up and say, somebody has harassed me and this needs to be stopped, I think it is their responsibility to ask and investigate what exactly happened. That is what everybody deserves justice. Every woman deserves justice. And everybody deserves to have a voice. And no matter where we are, we don't have to get to positions being harassed every time as a woman. It's important because it makes us feel, and this kind of thing will make many younger people who are desiring such positions not to want to get there or want to be intimidated, feel I cannot get there. And actually, this is one of the things that hinders women from getting to positions of authority, because you think of how do I get there? How do I fight through all these orders to get to such positions? This is a very great challenge, and it's unfortunate.
Dina, let me come to this issue of harassment and issue of, let's talk about one of the things you mentioned when you were talking about the progress that you're very proud of. Is you mentioned the feminists and the women movement that have in the last 5 years that are driving this thing. So I want to talk about power and agency. And I've written, I'll consider myself a feminist to some extent, because I've written a number of, my recent policy paper for the French think tank was understanding the role of women in armed conflict. And I tried to strike an objective position where I was looking at where women are not necessarily victims in all cases. So if I go back to Nigeria, go back to the pre-colonial times, look at in the South where women organized and fought against the colonial masters, against the tax, these were predecessors to some of the feminist movement that you're talking about. So in talking about power and agents, I wanted to speak on how women force or women agency are, how women are claiming or fighting or collectively, you know, expressing their power and agency in this fight towards equality. So I'm of the opinion that no oppressor is going to willingly give you freedom. So I wanted to know how women to speak on that movement that women have done to attain what they've attained so far, and what can be done to even attain even more.
Okay, great, thank you for that question. And Dr. Michael, welcome to being a feminist ally.
I should get an award.
You have to tell us what you have been able to do for women to get an award.
Okay. I will submit that to you.
After we have given all the women the awards they deserve. But yes, we need men ally for sure in this movement and to progress the feminist agenda. And to your question, definitely I don't see victimhood in women, even with all the challenges that they have faced. African women have showed time and time again that, you know, they have agency to speak out, even when spaces are closed, that they have agency to, you know, to support and uplift their own lives, but also the lives of their families and their communities. And for the women's movement, I think we have seen that actually there is research that shows that the progress we have, for example, in the laws and policies to end gender-based violence is because of women's movement and feminist movement. It's because there is, like, that research was very comprehensive, and it shows a direct correlation between the women's movement and those policies. And actually, one of the big progress made in African countries around addressing gender inequalities is having policies around ending gender-based violence. Of course, implementation is a different story altogether, but at least we have tools in terms of laws and policies, and that we owe to the women's movement. and women and girls that, you know, that are always fighting for this agenda. And so for me, I see power, I see agency, I see limitless potential, even within challenges and barriers that are facing women that are oftentimes or most of the time structural in nature and therefore really difficult to address and difficult to achieve, but yet women have shown us that they can still show power and agency in those times. I mean, we have had in different countries because of women, you know.
I agree with you. And again, to be honest, before I come to Damilola, if you look at places like so where I'm talking about, Damilola was mentioning something about women placed at the periphery of so you see in political parties, women are placed at the periphery of, you see, you call them the women to get votes. You have women, you know, you don't place them at the place of position, they're always at the periphery position. But again, I guess the question I was going to ask Damla is, again, most of the policies or laws that have driven this movement that Dina is talking about, in my opinion, are externally driven. So we could talk about the UN Security Resolution 1325. We could talk about the Women Conference in Beijing. We could talk about all of this stuff. But what is being done at the grassroots level? What is the grassroots level to inspire, motivate this kind of change that we want? And again, added to that is education of the girl child. How is that, you know, how are we addressing that to come from bottom up to influence that change?
Yeah, thank you very much. I think as Diana said, there are quite a couple of things that is happening, and women actually not all a bad story, because of course the gender gap is actually being closed little by little. We have, you know, women getting to some positions, yes. But yes, as you said, some of these things have been done by different, more international organizations. But when it comes to local, it's not like if women are doing a lot when it comes to their agency locally at the grassroots. But it's just that we are not yet seeing the efforts of some of these things when it comes to political participation, where it is especially at the grassroots, because the women need to get to that position. It's not going to be good for a woman wanting to contest for a presidency who has not known at the local level. And that's why the effort of this movement needs to be seen, because women need to be involved from the grassroots when it comes to politics, because we already see a lot of women, we already see some inclusive spaces being created, even at the workplace. There are some of these providing some resources and support. I remember there's an organization called eHealth Africa. They do a lot of things, training for women legislators. They do a lot of things trying to encourage a lot of women to contest for positions in Nigeria and Africa. They are trying to amplify women's voices. A lot of that have been doing, and they try to, you know, kind of celebrate their achievement of women. They do a lot of that. So we need to kind of, what this organization needs to do is enact and enforce gender equality laws a lot more, especially from the grassroots, so that when they get at the grassroots, a woman who is known in our community as a societal leader, we kind of have a voice to contest even at the primaries. But when women are not known at that level, it becomes a challenge for them to get to those positions, because coming out to be selected to stand for your party is a big deal. And so once the structure from the beginning does not support that, it becomes a challenge. So there are quite a lot of steps that can be taken. And this is part of eradicating some of this harmful challenge, because as Diana said, women are really trying. It's not like if they are not there. But when we look at it in terms of percentage of the numbers, we see, because a lot of women are trying to feel, we see a lot of young girls now, when it comes to it, you talked about education, they do STEM courses. But let me tell you something, the reality is that when they get to positions, do you know that they prefer to hire the guy who has done mechanical engineering than the girl who has done mechanical engineering because she's a girl? And this is one of the most, because it's not about education. I can say categorically that we have many young girls who have even gone into STEM, who have done courses, who have tried to break the barriers, doing courses that actually initially thought to be for male, but now are done by these girls. But when they get to some position, even by women, they will tell you who is looking for you. We are not looking for, we can't employ a girl child, because we can't employ you because you're a girl. Will you be able to go to the rig? Will you be able to pair you with men? So this, and if they are denied opportunities from the beginning, how do they want to become a voice? So we need to advocate for such policies to change this narrative and see that wherever a woman desires to be a mechanical engineer or an engineer, whatever, then she should be allowed to raise to the top of that career, given all the fact that she has what it takes already. And so it's because I feel that women are not, they don't lack education and training. A lot do, but even the ones that have the education, are they allowed to, do they allow their voice to be heard? And then we need to promote that. And then I think we need to do a lot of work. Thank God for you. A lot of working with men and creating a reorientation and understanding the fact that this is a girl doesn't mean that she doesn't know what she's doing. If a girl decides to do this course, that means she can get to. And so these are some of the things I think is it's a problem. And you talked about all these, because you can see all these regional and continental initiatives you talked about. Yes. Even but at the grassroots, women are not lacking. Even at the grassroots, in Nigeria, there are so many organizations. They come to the university, try to train girls. I'd be involved in one when I was in the private university. Every summer, we try to train girls on why it is important for them to get to positions of authority. Yes, but I think it's at policy. But when it comes to workplace, a lot of women are getting to positions in STEM, in engineering, in all this. There are women getting there. But I think politics is one of the greatest challenges, getting women to get to those places and starting from the grass, understanding the tactics and the principles behind politics and how, knowing how to play the game and getting there so that they can be a voice, starting from the grassroots, and they can rise from the grassroots to the top. I think that's one of the challenges we have.
Brilliant. Some of the let me come to Dinana, but some of the challenges that I've not heard, I'm quite surprised that I was waiting for Damilola to mention them, especially in the Nigerian case. I wanted to ask Dina to see if it's also it's one of the things that women that discourages or excludes women in the Nigerian case study. I understand when it comes to political elections, it's like, one, the high cost of entry. One is the money, you know, it's a very high question. Then women don't have the economic power to enter, and then the violence involved. But then, you mentioned something very interesting that when you were talking about women's nurturing duties as a mother, as a sister, as a woman, you know, some of those things and the lack of awareness and how that interferes into you doing your role in the political stuff. How does that apply in Rwanda, where we've seen, not only Rwanda, we could mention Rwanda, in South Africa as well, we see women have high percentage in South Africa. We see other places, Seychelles and other places. Are these factors not evident in these places? Or if they are, how have they been able to overcome them compared to places like Nigeria?
I mean, it's a question of finances in terms of... because also African campaigns, you know, they are really so much about money. Like, you have to almost buy voters. Like, you must have money to run a campaign. You know, I have heard stories of women that even before a meeting starts, even before a rally starts, the people who came to the rally want money. They want money for transport and for other things. And so without money, it becomes really difficult. And also because of the structural inequality that we've already talked about, that hinder women to actually be financially viable, because, you know, oftentimes they have no access to, you know, productive resources like land, and therefore they can't even get loans. Opportunities for entrepreneurship oftentimes are limited for women in terms of really big businesses, inheritance laws are oftentimes not on their side. And so that definitely is a limitation to be able to get the finances you need to run a campaign, you know. But also, once you are in office, oftentimes also resources are not allocated for women's dockets. Not women's docket, but the women that docket that are led by women, you know, oftentimes they really struggle to get allocation of resources that are adequate to be able to achieve the agenda that they are pushing for. And so that definitely continues to be a challenge that is coming from already structural inequalities and barriers that women face, you know. And when I talked about unpaid care work and domestic work, it shouldn't be a responsibility of only women. It should be shared work, not biological. I don't need to be a woman to cook or to clean. So men and women can be nurturers. Those are social construction responsibilities that need to change so that women and men are actually able to contribute to that aspect as much as they also contribute to the public aspect in terms mm-hmm. of in terms of the external employment and those kind of things, because I think what we're seeing in modern society that is I think actually in modern society we're seeing even a more burden on women than mm-hmm. it was in pre-colonial times, you know, because mm-hmm. in pre-colonial times at least it was very clear that it's women's role to cook and clean and look after their households, and probably they will influence society indirectly through their husband and their sons. But in modern society, you are expected to do all this domestic work, but you are also somewhat expected to go outside and work and make money. And so it becomes really challenging in terms of well-being of women. And also when we want to have capable women, we want them to be with mental, physical well-being that is also catered for. And I think in situations with like this kind of high burden expected on them, it also becomes a challenge on them.
I agree with you to some extent. And the extent where I agree with you to is, I don't know if this can be institutionalized. I think this has to be at the personal family level. I grew up in a family where we're mostly boys. My mom had mostly boys. And I started cooking from 8 years old. And I cook, I do most of the house. And I've got two girls and a boy. And I teach them, I say, everyone has to do. There's no, this is the person's role. So, but for to institutionalize that, I don't know. I think that might be a law.
Yeah, I have some ideas. I have some ideas.
let's hear your ideas.
Okay, for me, I think it's all about the cultural and social barriers. And it's an issue of a reorientation. I also grew up in a family where we had a lot of boys. All my junior brothers are all married now and they are doing well. They take care of their family. There shouldn't be anything if you're a boy or a girl. It shouldn't be like, but it's because of the context. Yeah, I am. Yeah, you see, you hardly see when I go to church here, it's the men that carries the children. You see a man carrying a child and carrying the bag and carrying everything. Yeah. And as you said, in Africa, I think there's a lot of burden on women. We have a lot to be done. We have a lot of responsibilities. So much is expected of us. And I think it's just a need for us to kind of reorient ourselves about the fact that either you're a boy or a girl, no matter who you are, you should be able to do some basic things. Because as Diana said, there's a lot of economic inequality, making women less. Imagine in Nigeria, women earn significantly less than men when it comes to Nigerian. Women earn only about 77% of every dollar a man earns. So automatically, women are kind of already marginalized at some level. So it takes you getting to that position to break the barriers. And we've seen a lot of women already today breaking that barriers. Not to say that those challenges are still not there. The challenges are still there. We have political exclusion, we have healthcare challenges, because women in almost Nigeria alone, in almost every society, women are the poorest of the poor. Because even in some of these developed societies where we call, they see this gender gap, they see work gap, pay when it comes to women. And so it's not just, having limited access to funding and all these things and resources is also one of the problems, because you mentioned it, I didn't talk about that. Yes, it's because, it's unfortunate that politics is quite very expensive. And that's why we have a lot of challenges when it comes to women getting to positions in politics. How do you afford the fund? Then I talked about is that actually you almost have to buy voters to vote for you. Vote buying is a challenge. Where do you get that resources? Where do you get that money? So we can cope some of these challenges. Women are already taking strides. But before we can see significantly, when it comes to the numbers you're talking about, the 50% they're advocating for, it's still going to take a long time, because no country has actually gotten there. Thank God for Rwanda. Thank God for some of them when it comes to the numbers. But in reality, when it comes to the visibility of breaking these barriers, it's going to go a long way. We need to do some things so that we can. And it's starting from breaking some of these barriers so that women's voice, so that cumulatively we can see that, yes, because we can see that in a lot of sectors, you go to banking, go to entrepreneurship, you see women breaking barriers, doing stuff that, you know, a lot of things are happening nowadays that women are actually doing. But we need to be able to, because when we can break this barrier in politics and they are able to get to those positions, and cumulatively They have a voice within the system where policies that are going to keep advancing the rights of women are not going to be sidelined. That is where we are going to say, okay, we have made it.
Yeah. I agree with you. And I was going to say, in my book, some of the conclusion I came up with for the continent, I said, one, the youth, because Africa has like the youngest youth, the teeming youth, and women are going to be key to the development of that society. But now you've mentioned like women have made strides. So I'm going to ask both of you before I come to the last question. Mm-hmm. So we've seen women have reached their highest position in certain countries. We've seen recently in Namibia, we've seen Tanzania, we've seen in some other African countries. What is your assessment? Do you think these women have performed or are performing in a way that gives hope to other women, or that makes it create an example that we can look and see, woman, a woman has done it, she did it well, so a woman can do it better? What's your assessment of the past women that have reached the president level in the continent, those that are currently like in Tanzania, like Namibia? Let me start with Ina.
I feel like that question is not fair on women, because they come into leadership, first of all, with already existing structural barriers that it becomes really difficult for them to even lead. And for some of them come into leadership because there is a crisis to happen. Like we saw that in the Central Republic, where a woman came because, you know, like they needed a woman to save that day. And at the same time, you're also asking, what has the woman achieved? You know? So I would say, I think they have inspired generations. They have, for girls watching, women who have reached the highest level of leadership, whether it is at the presidential or at the parliamentary level, for young girls, they are feeling inspired, and they feel that that is not far away from the reach if another woman has attained it. So it looks attainable. And so for me, that inspiration is extremely important. I mean, I'm sure there could be assessment of what those women have been able to do better than the men that were there before them. But I also think that when we ask that question, it makes me feel like we are measuring women to different standards, that even without removing any barriers for women's participation in leadership positions, we think that they are going to come and just do magic and all problems are solved.
Yeah. Damlala, what's your assessment of
I think these women have actually demonstrated remarkable leadership and courage, and they are quite encouragement for other people to think they can get there. Yes, there are challenges. It's not like it's not expected. Even we don't, and we see even with our men, nobody's going to perform magic, but they are kind of paved the way for future generations of women to pursue careers in leadership. So for me, that is the most important thing. And I think it's everybody, wherever you get a position of leadership, there are a lot of expectations. But as Dana said, sincerely, when a woman gets a position of leadership, there are more expectations. There are more, and everybody's waiting for her to either fail or succeed. And they want to nail her if she doesn't succeed, because most people see women as nurturers. So there is this expectation that a woman, when she gets a position, she must perform magic. But for me, I feel they've acted well. They've been courageous enough, and they're standing as opportunities. Everybody, younger people are looking up to them. Future generations are looking up to them and saying, yes, if this person can do it, they can get there. They've done their own part. I think it's for us, even as women, as individuals within the community, to hold hands together with those people who are in leadership, to give them their support so that they can succeed. Nobody succeed alone. But we have seen, remember during the era of COVID, we saw that countries where women were leading actually did well in the face of these challenges. And that shows that women can do well. But of course, we know that within our society, there are so many inherent structural challenges that makes it difficult for men, not even women alone, to fare well when it comes to leadership. And it's not because leadership is not an easy thing. And given the fact that we have a lot of structural challenges within our society, making it difficult. But I can say that for any woman who gets a position, all we need to do is encourage them, give them the support they need. We need to join hands together with men and women, young boys and young girls, so that we can make our society a better place. That's what I have seen.
Let me ask the last question, but let me start with you, Damilola, since you're already giving some prescription of how to do this stuff. So if you can envision an African society where women have where we have strong women leadership, and you know, in terms of numbers and in the substance as well, what would that look like, and how would the politics and society be different?
Yeah, for me, you can imagine a society where women are taking so much positions and leadership. And that for me is going to be a great, we have people, because women tend to take into consideration the needs of everybody, the needs of the young, old, the less privileged, persons with disability, because of the fact that it's something that women tend to do. And that's why sometimes when you see, people tend to say that when women are in positions of authority, they can be very stern, it can be very hard and difficult. It's because they take every little bit of things into consideration. So the needs of everybody will be taken into consideration. And that makes a society where nobody will be left behind. There is going to be absolute inclusion of everybody, either you're young or you're old, you're a person with disability, whatever your status is. And so imagine when we have a society like that. That means we'll be putting into place policies that will take into consideration the needs of everybody. And that society will begin to get better. There will be bridging gaps when it comes to education. It will be reducing the rate of giving young girls into marriage. We'll be reducing gender-based violence, will be reducing. These are some of the things. Workplace gaps, inclusion. Women will not be discriminated even at the workplace. There will be a little less harassment when it comes to workplaces, even at school. We'll be allowing women to get involved in STEM. These are some of the things that will happen in such a society. And you can imagine a society where we have allowed over 50%, because we know every society, most society, we have about 50% of the population are women. And so imagine having to include that. And especially because we had a lot of women involved in an informal economy. And you can imagine how much they can contribute to this, because economy is made by many of the informal people, and which are actually sidelined. So we can imagine when we encourage these people, and you cannot imagine how much they will contribute to sustainable development. This, for me, is what will happen when we allow women to get to those positions. A lot of things, the society will change, and which we spiral into sustainable development within the society, and everybody will be happy for it. That is what I feel will happen in such a society.
Great, great. Dina, same to you. I think you mentioned briefly before that, you know, we already have a model in Rwanda, and you mentioned some of the gains that we've seen through some of the laws that have been changed. So to add to that, do you agree with what Damilola has presented? Is it utopia, or do you agree with it? Is there an example from Rwanda to show that? And what more can we see with if this is across Africa?
I mean, I think I would like to start from the point that there is no country in the entire world that has achieved gender equality. So not even Rwanda. So having majority of women in parliament does not necessarily mean that now the lives of women are all good and they are enjoying the range of their human rights, and they are living free from violence and all those kind of things. No, that's not how it is. There is still a lot of work to be done to achieve that. Mm-hmm. But for me, in terms of like what I'm envisioning, you know, in a society where gender equality has been achieved, is a society where everyone is free from discrimination and biases, free from violence, and everyone is, everyone is safe in their household, is safe on the streets when they walk, is safe on the public transport, is safe at night when they go out, you know, which is not the case currently. It's safe at the place of work, because some people go to work and get harassed at the place of work. But also everyone has a voice and they feel heard, and that they are not discriminated against, or their voices is not marginalized because they are women, or because they are women with disability, or because it's a woman from a rural area, or because it's a young woman. It is because sexual minority, like, it is really important to understand also the intersectionality approach of this envisioning the world that we want. It's also one where not just because you're a woman, but because of any other identity you have, you are still respected, you are still protected, and you are still you can still be heard. And also that people are doing what they love to do, and that gives them financial freedom to meet all their needs that they have, you know. Everyone has healthy mental and physical health. You know, I think that will be a beautiful world.
I agree with you 100%. And I say we've made, from what I gather, we've made progress. And there are challenges that remains as well. But we've acknowledged the progress we've made, and we've also admit some of the work that needs to be done. I'm very, very grateful to have both of you join me. This has been a very insightful conversation, and I share your optimism and that word. And I don't think it's an utopia word. I think it's a word that is realistic. It's a word that should be, it's the word that we should really, everyone should have, should not have a fear of being harassed, or should have the hope. And I believe in the word of merit, but I also believe that everyone should be given. Some people have been marginalized, and they need to be given, I don't want to say head start, but to be given some special to catch up, with in this. So everyone should get that fair opportunity. But anyways, thank you very much, Dina, and thank you, Damilola. I'm so sorry. I didn't know you guys should be like, my business partner is based in Colombia. That was about 5 hours behind. It was really early. I'm really sorry.
No, that's fine.
I'm really sorry for that, but yeah. Thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
Nice meeting you, Diana. I look forward to seeing you more, and I look forward to working with you.
Nice meeting you, Dr. Demoyora, and also Dr. Michael. I'll be looking out for your work now that you are well published, which I've just learned now. And I have a commitment to read more African authors. So
yes. Thank you. Yes, it's an assignment.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thanks for the honor. Yeah.
All right. I'll see you. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Bye. Have a lovely day. Bye. Thank you for tuning in to a wonderful session today. And as usual, join me to thank my special guests, Dr. Damilola Abalajobi and Dina Musedawezo, who have provided a very rich insight into women's representation or underrepresentation in Africa's political space. I implore you to join me next week for another exciting episode. For now, stay best, and I'll see you.